As an employee-owned financial firm, Baird offers advice solely focused on clients' needs, while consistently investing in their expertise and capabilities to serve those in need. More information at baird-difference.com.
Nice to be with you, Mike. I'm doing fine. I hope you're well, too.
We are. Just make sure you grab your umbrella for the foreseeable future. And I guess those all those daffodils we saw pop up on Sunday and Monday, well, they're getting a drink today. So that's the I guess that's the other side of spring. We just don't want to revert back to, you know, the other part of spring that you and I don't want to talk about anymore.
And gentle rain is good. We like that better than a downpour, so that's okay.
That's exactly right, because we don't we don't need to deal with the inch or two at a time. That's not fun at all. Did you have a good spring break? The rest of the town was on break. Everybody who wasn't seemed like they were out on Thursday last week on St. Patrick's Day, as the weather was 74 down in Bloomington. There were people everywhere. It was really fun just to have that vibe again in town. We probably haven't had that since probably a home football weekend before. When in October, back before, right when we're getting ready to turn blue, but felt great last week.
It was good. I was working last week, but it was. It does feel good. It feels really good. I've been, you know, in meetings with people and gatherings and even dinners with people, which is nice. So we are watching the news, as I know you are, to make sure that we don't have any slippage, because there's a little clouds on the horizon, but we're watching carefully. And I think the main thing is, let's just all keep getting vaccinated and boosted, and we'll be in good shape.
That's the best way to get through it, and it looks like we are doing so. And of course, Murphy's Law, you close off, you and the city and everybody and the restaurant folks close off Kirkwood yesterday, and you have the most beautiful day. Beautiful day. And then today is today.
Well, they get to work out their systems again, I guess, or something before the crowds arrive. But it'll happen, and we're glad to see that it was a sign of spring, and it'll be delightful. Just not today, probably, or the next day or two. Next week. Let's aim for next week.
That's right. Because if there's one thing we can control, it is the weather. We're not doing that, or even trying to do so, and not in Indiana, and not in springtime. So that is part of it moving forward. So basically, to alleviate anyone's concerns, those streets are closed. They will remain closed until Halloween. Is that correct?
That's the plan. That's right. And so, no, you don't need to rush, and the restaurants can get them outfitted appropriately for the months ahead. And the plan is to terminate that, I think, very end of October, Halloween. That's right. That's, again, up to City Council sets those dates, but that's what we've gotten locked up so far.
Mayor John Hamilton joins us every Tuesday just after 4:05, and we talk about all the busy things happening here in the city of Bloomington. And, we've been talking about adding revenue sources, and, you've made your presentation with I guess to everybody, because anybody can read this at the city's website, about how we as a city are looking to raise revenue, how we're going to go about it. You made this presentation, and after talking to the city council, tell me where we are in the timeline, and exactly, without going line by line, what we're in those documents that people can read at their own leisure to see how this is going to work moving forward. I thought you did it's a very clear way to read it. Here's what we've got. Here's what we need. Here's where we're going to get it from, and here's what we're going to do with it. It's all in there. Folks, we can lead you to the water, folks. We can't make you drink it, but you have to look if you want to see what's going on.
Well, thanks for asking. You know, this is a big step for the community. There's a lot to talk about with it. I think maybe one of the ways to get into it is, you know, one of my main jobs as mayor, I think, is to try to look at the city at a pretty high level and think about where we headed and what are the things we're going to need to be as good a city as we can be, to be a place that where people can succeed and thrive as much as possible. And we have only a role to play in that. There are many, many things that go into that besides city government, but we have some role to play. And you know, I've been talking about it for a couple of years, Mike. It's interesting. I will tell you, I think I've mentioned before, when I came into this job 6+ years ago now, if you had asked me what our income tax rate was compared to the counties around us, I would have said, oh, we're probably near the top because we're a progressive city. We have high ambitions. And in fact, though, our income tax rate is the lowest of all seven counties that touch, including Monroe County, that surround us. We're the very lowest local income tax rate. And gets really technical, I know, but state government provides some of our funding, much of our funding. They prescribe property tax revenue. That's really decided at the state level what we get. It is the local income tax that is the only variable significant source of ongoing revenue. So different jurisdictions have passed different local income tax rates, and we've been a very low rate for a long time, but we have high ambitions. And frankly, as I look at the need for public safety, and you know, there are these big categories that we've talked about, from public safety to basic city services like information technology and cybersecurity, or park support, or street support. We've got real needs that are just not going to be met. We do all we can to save money. We've saved a lot of different programs, have changed and gotten more efficient. From street paving, we moved to 4 10-hour days and found out that's more efficient than 5 8-hour days. So we do that. We've figured out how to take smaller SUVs to calls from 911 for the fire department instead of driving a big fire engine out there. That saved us $1 million of replacement costs, and we do that in big and small ways. But these are big structural issues. So last week, I put out a proposal to the city council to say these are what I think we're going to need in the years coming. And now it's really up to them. So the schedule is, City Council has this proposal in front of them, and they have in April, three different sessions of April 6th, 13th, and 20th is the current schedule, to have that in front of City Council three Wednesday nights to make their vote on this. If eight of them support it, then it's done. If fewer than eight support it, then it goes to additional jurisdictions in the county under this arcane state law to decide whether it happens. And then I should stop and let you ask questions if that helped clarify things.
Well, first of all, the footprint, or the blueprint rather, for putting this all together, how did you come up with the priority list for that? Was it based on selling points? Was it based on necessity that you thought, talking with other leaders locally? Tell me how this, I don't want to say wish list, that sounds convoluted, but
yeah,
how do we get to this point?
Well, it's really a range of a whole bunch of things. For example, some of it is thrust upon us. Like city government has received for many years what's called a cable franchise fee. Everybody who has
they're gone,
TV,
huh?
And that revenue's declining. And that's what we use to pay for the information technology system, the community access television coverage, CATS, which people use, cybersecurity, et cetera. So we have a revenue source that's going down, and it's going to keep going down. So we have to think about how do we replace that revenue. So that's kind of thrust upon us. You have the police, sworn police officer salaries. That's the city council voted 7-2 to say, Mayor, we want you to give them a $5,000 a year raise. They're in charge of the money. I listen to that. But we need ongoing revenue to support that. That's over $1 million a year of increased expenses that we need to do. So some of those are driven by that. Others are really needs that I hear from the community. For example, we do a city survey every 2 years. One very consistent message from our scientifically done survey is we want to see more help done for affordable housing, from people who are homeless to people who are working and can't afford homes and others. And so we listen to that and we say, well, the legislature only lets us do certain things, and affordable housing costs money. So that drives some of those decisions. Other things that city council and we have developed with the community support, a climate action plan that says we need to take steps to respond to the climate changes that we're seeing and to do our best. So we have a big plan with a lot of ambitions to do different things on energy efficiency and solar generation and others, and replacing vehicles with hybrids or electrics, and all that costs money. So it's really a range. And what I tried to do, and I also met with council members and talked to them about their priorities, and talked to public players, business interests, advocacy groups, others, and said, what do you want to see? And then I got to try to put together a package that can get votes in the council. and ultimately they're in charge of this in terms of the revenue. So that's what I put out last week, and then there'll be further discussions, and ultimately this is the council, one of their key jobs is to vote on the revenue for the city, and I'll do my work and try to do my homework and put together a good package that really advances the city. And I'll just close with this. We live in a great city because people have invested for 200 years. They've built great parks. They've taken care of our roads. We've built beautiful city. We've supported the arts. We support, good housing developments. And we have to keep doing that. We have to keep planting trees under whose shade we will not sit. We have to keep investing in the future for the next generations. And that's what I think this budget, this proposal can help us do.
Now, you mentioned the word budget in there at the very end, and I don't want people to get this confused with the budget. How is this separate from it, the funding mechanisms, the reason you went general obligation bond versus other ways of doing it? I know we don't want to have an economic seminar right now, but just kind of the,
yeah.
I don't want to say layman's, but I'm a layman and I don't understand all this sometimes. How is this different from saying, why don't we just put this in the budget next year? How does this all work?
So the budget for 2023, which we develop really starting in a couple months and then goes to City Council in the fall, that budget will depend a lot on whether this revenue is going to arrive or not. If this revenue through the income tax change is not going to be happening, if it were to be defeated, for example, then the budget for 2023, we will not be able to sign the police salary increase because we just won't have the revenue to do it. So it is important to have this determined so we can frame up and present a budget for 2023 that either reflects the revenue or whatever revenue we have. So the timing is quite important. That's one of the reasons we wanted to do it in April and try to get it done by May. So as we build the budget, we have it in place because it has a major impact on that. And you referenced as well the bonds. I didn't really point out, besides the income tax, we can issue debt, and we do issue debt. City of Bloomington, if you counted everything up that we've borrowed from utilities to streets to the parking garages, all told, we've borrowed about $200 million. It's about a little over approaching $3,000 per person. Just for putting that in perspective, that puts us right in the middle of the 20 largest cities in Indiana of debt per person, per capita, which is kind of a good thing to know. We're proposing to borrow $10 million more, and the council asked me to do this as well, to do infrastructure investments for parks and for public works. That, by the way, will not change our per capita debt position from right in the middle of those 20 cities. We won't move a smidgen. We'll still be right in the middle of all those, but it does help us do some annual investments in infrastructure. That's important too.
And the other thing, just thinking aloud here, when it goes through to the council for these three dates in April, are we just talking up or down, or can we add, subtract to the plan?
Yeah, the council will get, they'll take at least three different votes, and it may even be more split up than that, but they'll vote on each of the bonds. Those are two $5 million bonds that have specific projects listed under them. So that they will vote on, and they can actually vote to, if we list projects 1 through 7 in priority order, they can say, I want to move priority 6 to priority 2 or
gotcha.
Priority 3, they can move that around. So those are two discrete votes. Then the local income tax vote is actually, it's literally just a vote on the rate. So it's an up or down vote. Now we will have to propose a particular income tax rate, which is really driven by what do we want to invest it in. That's why we started with the list of important investments. And then they'll vote on that. They can amend it. Somebody could say, well, I want to propose a 0.9%, and somebody will say, well, I'm going to amend it and change it to 0.62, and it's ultimately up to the council to pick that rate and vote on it. And again, it could go to other entities like the county council or Ellisville council or others to vote on that as well if fewer than 8 council members from the city vote for it.
And that's a little bit different than the budget procedure, so that's why I don't want people to get confused like I would be.
Yes, the state local income tax is determined by the state. They let locals change it. It's done at a county level, and there's a very very abstract and arcane thing called the Local Income Tax Council, which is made up of fiscal votes of the city council, the county council, the Ellisville council, and the Steinsville council. Actually all have various votes that are weighted in different ways reflecting the populations of those different entities.
So that answers the next question. If people are wondering or new to town or new to the program, is just because the city of Bloomington is coming up with this idea, it affects everyone in the county, correct?
It affects everyone who lives in the county who pays an adjusted gross income tax. It doesn't affect you if you work here and live in Greene County or Lawrence County, then you pay the Lawrence County rate, which is it's actually kind of surprising to people that if you have two employees working at Cook or working at Catalan, and one lives in Lawrence County and one lives in Monroe County, the Lawrence County person's paying a lot more taxes on the money they earned here in Monroe County than the Monroe County person is. So Lawrence County is receiving almost twice as much per dollar from that person's income that's earned here compared to what we are.
That is interesting. Absolutely right. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest today. And before we let you go, I know you've got a busy afternoon. We had a story earlier in the week about the Johnson Creamery smokestack. Where does that stand? And, I guess we got to get into some annexation lawsuits as well. Well, you didn't think I'd leave that one out. So we'll start
with the smokestack.
That's it. You always got something going on.
The first thing is the smokestack still stands. That's the most important thing,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Timber.
And we did, as you know, it's been a concern, and if anybody's really studied it with a plumb line, they can see it's got a real tilt to it. And we did get an engineering report just a couple weeks ago that said that is not a safe smokestack. And it absolutely, for safety, needs to come down to about 60 feet, which is more than half of its height cut off. It's about a 140-foot stack, I think. So that is happening right now. The engineers have reported. There's a contractor's being looked at. It's interesting because it's an historic structure and has to go through some processes to decide, well, if it needs to come down to 60 feet for safety, what happens next? Does it get rebuilt as a historic icon for the city? Does it stay at 60? Does it get demolished all the way and something else is done there? And that's kind of the debate that goes on with the Historic Preservation Commission and the City Council as well. But the short order is we're trying to get it to safety as quickly as we can. It's privately owned, so we have to go through some hoops to get that done. But the engineering report made clear that smokestack is unstable and needs to be brought down quickly to at least 60 feet.
Well, so nature doesn't trump the order.
Exactly.
There and
exactly.
move that down quickly. Mayor John Hamilton joins us for 90 more seconds before we have to get him on his way today. And the headline, Bloomington is waiting and seeing about whether to challenge the 2019 annexation law. I know you're probably not going to break that news right now. What goes into that decision, and when do you expect to have one made?
Well, yes, we've talked a number of times about annexation, and I know there are different views about this. My job, I think, is, again, to try to think about the city's future and make us as strong and vibrant as we can be, not only for the city itself, but for our whole region. And the city boundaries, I do believe, need to be right-sized, as they have been for 200 years of our history, but we've stopped doing that. So my expectation, you saw there was a lawsuit filed regarding areas 1A and 1B. Those are kind of the big western and southwestern areas of the city. The remonstrators, the people protesting annexation, have filed a lawsuit to try to stop it. We will very likely defend that. And then the open question is how we proceed in the other areas with regard to the waiver law, which is kind of the big 800-pound gorilla in the corner about whether that law was legal. We don't think it was, but that's what the courts are for. So we're looking at our options, how to be most efficient, how to be most practical about moving forward. And probably by the next time we'll talk, we'll have something more to talk about, I expect.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate the insight on everything. We know you've got a rain gauge to measure and empty, and we will get we'll get back at it next Tuesday, my friend. Thank you for your time, Mayor Hamilton.
Have a good day.